Hi, I'm Matthew Kind. Every Monday, look for a fresh new episode where I'll take you behind the scenes and interview the insiders that are shaping the rapidly evolving cannabis industry. Learn more at cannainsider.com. That's C-A-N-N-A insider.com. Now here's your program. Today, we're going to hear how a new hemp seed vodka is winning taste tests and garnering devotees across Texas. I'm pleased to welcome Ben Williams, founder of Highway Vodka, to the show. Ben, welcome to Canna Insider.
Hey, man. Thanks so much for having me. Great to be here.
Give us a sense of geography. Where are you in the world today?
I'm in Houston, Texas.
Okay. Yep. Good place to dream up your plans for Highway Vodka. So tell us, what is Highway Vodka?
So Highway Vodka basically is the result of about 8 years of tinkering and messing around, learning how to distill spirits, basically a hemp-based spirit that's a grain to glass using nothing but hemp, corn, and water, and that's it.
Okay. Ben, share a little bit about your background and journey and how you got into this space, became a distiller of spirits, and started Highway Vodka.
Yeah, so owned a couple of bars and restaurants beforehand, you know, and just literally got into distilling as a hobby, just curiosity and all that kind of stuff. And so just bought a little 13-gallon still online and started reading every book I could find and every YouTube video I could watch and, you know, literally just picked it up as a hobby. And then so just doing that for a couple of years with a business partner and, you know, stumbled across hemp and changed everything. And, you know, just kind of went from there with it. I mean, it was, like I said, it was just literally a hobby that turned into a business and over the course of about 8 years or so. Okay. So it wasn't an overnight thing at all.
So 8 years of kind of tinkering, getting used to it. And how did the idea of hemp come into the picture?
Yeah. So a friend of mine, after being in, you know, distilling for about, you know, 2 or 3 years, messing with, you know, started off with just a sugar wash, you know, then I'm just messing with a bunch of different grains, went to California. A friend of mine opened up a dispensary out there and he introduced me to some friends of his that were distilling with, you know, marijuana. And so I knew enough about distilling at the time to kind of notice what was going on, you know, like in the various stages of the process with what they were doing. And I liked a lot of the things I saw. And obviously I couldn't mess with, you know, marijuana in Texas. So I just started ordering every part of the hemp plant that I could find, trying to see, you know, how I could incorporate it. Cause I liked some of the things I saw, like viscosity differences and stuff like that. So, you know, just started doing that and over literally, you know, some years and a bunch of different mashes and what, you know, runs, kind of stumbled upon the thing that's right in front of you, you know, the hemp seed. Of course, it's always the easiest thing, you know, but you don't start there. It can't be that simple, you know. And then, so found that. And then, well, that actually wasn't simple because then it came about like figuring out ratios. And I'm not a scientist by any means, neither is my partner, but like, this was literally just a trial and error, like, you know, just total, you know, just messing around. And then you stumble upon this and you stumble upon that. And one of the big things we stumbled upon that was a game changer was from using, when we were using the hemp seed and stuff like that, we would always rack the liquid off from in between the oils that were formed during the fermentation period and the grain beneath. And then one day out of just being lazy, we just dumped all that stuff in there because racking is kind of a messy, sticky process. Neither of us felt like doing it. Like, I just throw it all in there, who cares? And boom, game changer. So that's kind of how it's kind of interesting. That's really this trajectory of Highway Vodka has been a lot of moments like that have changed everything. We're totally not planned, just like, you know, who cares? And then, oh, really? Wow. You know?
So you and I were chatting earlier and you told me that the key to know if you're making good vodka, and in this case, hemp seed vodka, is people's face. Their face doesn't lie. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So like during the process, you know, we would go up to the bars and restaurants and let people, you know, our regulars kind of taste little stuff we were making, like, hey, you know, I want to try something. And, you know, in the beginning, oh man, you know, people are just like, you know, what are you trying to kill me? You know, all this kind of stuff. And, and, you know, and just as we got better and better and better, and then once we introduced, you know, the hemp, and then once we started throwing distilling on the grain, completing with the oil and everything, that was one of the big things, because like, this is like the only thing I know how to cook. So it was really personal to me. Like every person that I put this before, I'm watching your face to see, you know, what you think about what I cooked, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And once, you know, I'll never forget, there was a group of women up at the bar. I knew them and I was just like, hey, you know, guys want to try something. And everybody wanted to taste it neat and room temperature for some strange reason. Nobody drinks vodka that way, but that's how they wanted to do it. That actually turned out to be a gift, because learning to gear it towards that palate. So yeah, gave it to them and watching their face, and their face didn't like curl up. It went to like, they kind of, you know, kind of, oh, this is nice kind of face. And I was just like, yeah, that's it right there.
Yeah, right. If their lip and cheek curl up like they just sucked on a lemon, then you're like, oh, I've go back.
Yeah, back to the drawing board. Yep.
Yeah.
But no, when I saw that, I was just like, oh, okay, we're really onto something here.
That's pretty nice, because you kind of figured out like a truth detector there, because people, like when you ingest something, especially like an alcohol that has this level of concentration, it is, you know, you're going to have a facial reaction.
Oh, dude, their face does not lie. And I'm sitting there like, you know, every time I do a sampling or tasting or meet the maker in some liquor store or wherever, and people come and they get their sample, I'm just studying your face, because you could, if your face cracks wrong, fortunately it doesn't happen often, but yeah, I'm watching, you know, so your face is going to tell the truth. And so yeah, won a way lot more of them than lost. So that's what gave me the confidence to push forward.
So do you have to get a special kind of permit for the type of vodka, or how does that work?
Permitting. Yeah. So that was a 2.5 year process. 2.5 year process on getting those permits through. You have to start all the way from the federal government, all the way down to your smallest local governing entity, to get an actual manufacturing, for distilled spirits, permit. And so, yeah, man, it was a 2.5 year process. And mainly because of the hemp, you know, because it's not, I guess it's just not a thing they deal with often up there. So they didn't really know, you know, okay, what is this? And I had to go through so many rounds of testing, federal testing, by different labs that they, you know, they okay, basically, you know, testing for THC and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, it was quite a process. And I mean, the biggest thing about it is too, is that before you can even apply, which is what I found to be like, would be one of the largest barriers of entry into the industry, if you want to be a manufacturer, you have to already have your facility locked down, lease agreements, whatever the deal is. And that has to be approved before you could even submit your application. So imagine in my situation, you know, having to say lease a facility for 2.5 years, not even knowing if you're going to actually get this permit, you know?
Man.
Yeah. So, but it worked out.
Seems really backwards, doesn't it?
Yeah. I don't get it, but it is what it is. But the beautiful part, another falling backwards into something moment, was my partner. He was big into like horses and riding, cutting horses and stuff like that. So he had this big barn, and on top of the barn, he actually had his construction offices as well. And so we used the barn, you know, some land that he already owned and a building he already owned free and clear as our site.
Nice. Good idea.
We went and we weren't stuck with paying rent and stuff like that. So it made it easier for us to stomach the 2.5 year process, because, you know, we have the site, and then, you know, and we're just still hobbying along the way. Like, that'll be cool, you know, if it happens, you know, whatever, you know, it wasn't anybody's primary dream. It was just, we're just trying to see it through. And yeah, when we finally got the permit, another backwards moment, my partner actually broke his ankle messing with his horses. And he was like, man, I'm done with horses. I'm finished. You know, I'm over this. And then that was right around the time the permit came. Like, hey, well, permit came. Let's get rid of them. Let's build the distillery in here. And that's what we did. So when I tell you, when I think about that out loud, I say that, like, it is funny. There's so many just weird things like that just fell in place at the right time, you know?
Yeah.
It's really interesting. Same thing with my distribution, you know, similar story to that. So
I'd always rather be lucky than right, you know?
Yeah. But you know, what's interesting, man, is like, you can be lucky, but if you're not prepared for that lucky moment,
yes.
it's gonna go right by you. Like with distribution, like, same thing. Like I thought, you know, for my relationships in the restaurant industry and stuff, that I had nurtured these relationships with some of the distributors, and, you know, and they are all like, oh yeah, we got you, you know, whatever. Right. Then when I show up with my permit and I'm like, okay, I'm ready. You know what I'm saying? Now what's the next step? Oh yeah, no, we're not going to do anything with it. This company doesn't want anything to do with anything remotely associated with the cannabis industry. They think anything cannabis related is a threat to the spirits industry.
The devil. Yeah.
Man. Meanwhile, you're selling spirits like crazy, but whatever. Right, so, right. Yeah. And so that was just one reason for a turn down I got from a very large company that I thought I was in with. But man, that turned out to be, and I'll never forget this meeting, because this kind of really kind of pissed me off. Like, so the guy, we nurtured a relationship, thought it was good to go, call him over to the restaurant, one of my spots for lunch, eat lunch. And he just goes down this rabbit hole of why it's not going to work. Now, mind you, it was been all positive to this point. He goes down a rabbit hole. Why it's not going to work? Blah, blah, blah. You know, the cannabis tie-in thing. You know, they don't like that. Whatever. And then he's like, but at best, maybe I could hook you up with a broker. And you can get, you know, your little project, your little pet project into a store or two. I just got it from the table. And I was like, hey, they'll bring you your check. No problem. See you later. I walked out this place, called a buddy of mine just to rant. He said, hey, let me call a buddy of mine, see if he can point you another direction or whatever. That guy that he called happened to be Tom Montague, who's like the VP of Silver Eagle Distributors, which is like a Budweiser house, which is like the largest beer distributor in the country, right? And they were like, hey, we're about to look at spirits, you know? Let us take a look at it. You know, we're about to start distributing spirits. Same thing, had that meeting, did the blind taste test against two other brands, won it unanimously, became their first spirit, and it just rolling from there. And, you know, and so that's what I'm saying, like, lucky, how lucky can you get for a friend of yours to call this guy and ask him, and they actually be looking for a spirit. You know what I mean? I never even knew they were in the ballpark, you know?
Yeah.
And then that. But then also to have a quality product that I'll put up against anything, I don't care what it is, but that they liked, you know what I'm saying? So where the opportunity met preparation or whatever, however that goes. But yeah, man, and you see, that's just the whole, you see everything, it just kind of happened. Like, there was no master plan. It's like you plan that you get this far and then you hit a wall. And then as you rebound, you fall backwards from running into that wall, you fall into this, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Interesting stuff.
I want listeners really to understand what the flavor profile is here and how it compares to other spirits, so they can really understand that, you know, you've talked about the finish a little bit. Can you talk a little bit about how you experience it and what people's like kind of first adjectives they use when they describe it after taking a shot?
First thing they always say is smooth.
Okay.
That's the first thing, like no burn, smooth. Second thing I hear, and I'm just literally just giving you the words that come out of people's mouths. When you described it that way, that's perfect, because I'm just running it through my head. Smooth, sweet, nice. I like that one too. And one I get a lot is good. That's good. You know, because what it is, man, is like the whole thing is like, it's about, again, it comes back to the hemp and that oil, right? And so what that oil is doing is like, it's not only like knocking the burn off, so it's making it a little bit more palatable, you know, making it easier to go down. You know what I'm saying? Like giving it a little bit more legs than your standard vodka would have. But then also what oil does in cooking is hold flavors on your palate. So then it's snatching hold to like the sweetness from the corn in the mash bill and kind of holding that on your palate a little bit more. So it gives you more of like a sweeter, but not sweet like sugar, but like just a sweet finish and a smooth experience so that, you know, you can often people say like, hey, I could just drink this neat or I could drink this just on ice. I wouldn't need anything with this. You know, most vodkas you have to mix with this and that. I would just drink this smooth because there's character there. You know what I'm saying? And yeah. That's basically how I would describe it. Nice, smooth with a little sweet finish.
What about the burn? The burn is kind of, that's why it's smooth because the burn's muted.
Yep. No burn.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying about the oil.
And the how does the hemp affect the viscosity?
So when you have, okay, so those oils that I was telling you about that form during the fermentation period.
Yeah.
A couple of things happen there. The hemp actually acts as a nutrient for my yeast. So it makes the yeast live longer and produce more alcohol. So my batch, my yields per batch got larger when I started using, you know, the plant. Then you throw all that stuff in the still, that oil floats on top of the still as acting as like almost like the first layer of filtration with the think like poopery, how that kind of functions, right? Those vapors got to come up through that thick layer of oil first before they get to the copper plates in the column, right? So by distilling only six times and by keeping only collecting only the hearts of the run, which is like the purest part and the sweetest part of the run, of the distillate, what you'll notice is like when it comes off, it has like, if you, let me see, how can I just explain and make it more visual? If, you know, okay, like, you know how you can ring your glass with something and it kind of hangs a little bit, you know what I mean? Like it just has a little cling to the side of the glass and it kind of creeps. Yeah, that's exactly the viscosity change that I speak of that highway has. And that little nuance of body, that little extra body that it, because I like a little extra body. that little extra body is what holds those flavors and what not just enough to knock that burn out of there to kind of coat your tongue a little bit and make it just a smoother experience, you know, so there's no burn. And that, like I said, that's what yields to the happy face instead of the sad face, you know, okay. That when people look for it. So that
residue is like, that's the key difference.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, residue, it's not an appealing term, but like that let's just say that oil, you know, that light oil that's present, that gives it just a little bit more density. Not as dense as wine, but not as watery, let's just say, as your standard vodka, right? Just a slight, you know, almost really imperceptible. Only reason I know it is because, I mean, I look at this stuff so hard, but like the easiest test, ring your glass with some highway, ring your glass with some whatever else. And you'll just notice the time that it takes, you know, just that those couple of half seconds that it takes kind of creeping down the side of your glass. And that's what it's about.
Okay. There's like a little bit of an essence there.
Yep.
Okay.
Essence. I like that. And it's only 57 calories. I didn't know that until recently.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that because, you know, White Claw and these seltzers and different things are really kind of eating into the beer market. People are concerned about calories and hangover. Mm-hmm. Talk a little about calories and hangover, if you would.
So it's interesting. It was never designed to be such, right? It wasn't like, oh, let's make some kind of low cal. I wouldn't even know how to do that if you asked me, to be honest. So literally, I guess just the simplicity of our mash bill, just keeping it honest, you know, just the good old hemp, corn, and water and run with it. I don't know, man. I just took it one day and I just said, let me get it tested. So I sent it back to one of those labs that we had to get it tested at for the government or whatever, just to get the calorie stuff. And it came back at like 57 calories per serving. And I was just like, okay. And so I started looking that up and I didn't realize that actually put us at the lower end of the spectrum of as far as calories go. like down there where the ones that actually are designed to be low calorie are. Not that, I mean, not as low as like Skinny Girl or, you know, one of those other kind of deals, but not far from them at all, like literally like 7-8 calories, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so it just made me wonder, like, golly, like, what are people putting in this stuff after the fact? You know what I'm saying?
What are they putting in there? Like, I'm curious. Man,
they're putting sugar. It was so, this weekend I was in a Total Wine store in Austin. And I was looking, I was doing an event there, and before it started, whatever, I'm just kind of, you know, walking up and down the aisles. I'm looking at some stuff, and I'm seeing like floaties and stuff like that. And I'm looking at this one bottle, and it was just like, what is that? Is that like sugar? Like, so it just made me think, like, there's a lot going on after the fact. There's coloring, you know what I'm saying? There's all kinds of things that are being added, but I don't know why or what for, because unless it's a flavored product, like, I don't get it. So like, what, and maybe it's something that I'm missing, like, I don't know about, you know, or whatever. Maybe it's some kind of, I mean, I have no idea what it could be, but there's definitely something going on after the fact, because I didn't intend for it to be that way. I just, you know, just make the stuff how I make it. Maybe it's the cuts that I make, you know, by only keeping the hearts versus the tail. I don't know, but it really made me wonder, like, you know, for it not to be designed to be such, and it just ends up that way. Like, I wish I knew what was, but that's why I wish I was a scientist. I have no real explanation for why, but I do know that there is some funny business going on after the fact. Like, it has to be, you know, but
I know you mentioned the hearts and tail thing, but I know you mentioned that before, but I just want to make sure listeners really understand what you mean when you say that. So if you could just go over that one more time.
Yeah. So like in distilling, there's four parts to every run, right? They're the four shots, the heads, the hearts, and the tails. And they all boil off in specific temperature ranges, right? And the first two parts that come off are not really drinkable. Like you heard moonshine, blindness, and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, if you drink that stuff, you're in trouble. Now, the hearts and the tails, you can consume. And most people that are like really trying to get like the most out of their batches and stuff like that, like if you want every drinkable part of alcohol out of a batch, you know, you'll blend those two items together to just squeeze it dry, you know, for lack of a better word. A lot of people do that. A lot of those continuous still operations when you get really huge and you just can't afford to turn it off. I mean, that's kind of what you find. They never turn off, so there's not really that many cuts going on and whatever, right? So you can drink that stuff, but that's where a lot of the headaches and stuff lie. And that's where a lot of the funny business that you don't really necessarily prefer to have in your glass. You know what I'm saying? Will you be okay? You know, that's relative. Because you'll probably have a horrible headache in the morning. You know what I'm saying? If you overdo it. Well, that's with anything, right? You overdo it. But that's the stuff that and that was all just from me reading and stuff like that, learning about, you know, the differences of the cuts. And so that's why I kind of just narrowed in on the heart, because again, it was just for us and family and friends or whatever. So I had no use for tails. It wasn't a business at that point. And then when it came time to scale, I didn't want to learn how to deal with tails because it took me long enough just to get this thing right. So I just stayed with it, you know, all hearts, no tails. So that's basically what that means. And those temperature ranges vary from, you know, depending on your climate, depending on what type of equipment you're using and stuff like that. But it's a very key part in making something, you know, unique and stuff like that. You want to really pay attention to your cuts.
Yeah. Well, you have a really interesting story, how you persisted with the distribution. You worked hard and kind of opportunities came up and you're able to capitalize on them because you were ready. So that's really the story of, you know, persistence and grit. I think that aspect of the entrepreneur is sometimes underestimated, just that grit to keep on going when it's not clear what to do next. So well done there.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, Ben, I'd like to ask a few personal development questions before we wrap up the interview. Is there a book that's had a big impact on your life or your way of thinking that you'd like to share?
Yeah, I would say there's two books, actually. I was just kind of thinking of one that's kind of directly related to the business that I'm in, and that's just the Home Distilling and Infusing Handbook. And that's okay. Literally, it just shows, it's like a little handbook, literally. And I actually talked to the guy, reached out to him way back many years ago to, cause he was doing like little consulting classes and he was teaching people how to do it. So I tried, but he had since retired. I didn't realize how long the book had been in print at that point, but I actually got in touch with him. It's kind of cool. But anyway, that book just kind of made me, just really kind of opened the door as far as like what in the most layman's terms as possible, what distilling is and how you can do it. Because subsequently after that, you know, I read so many other books, and some of them read like chemistry books, just too much. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
But that book, The Home Distilling and Infusing Handbook, was just a nice, easier thing and to get into or whatever. I'm sorry, it's called The Home Distiller's Workbook. That's my fault.
Okay.
Home Distiller's Workbook. And yeah, so anyway, that was a great one. And then the next one that kind of led to what you were talking about at the end, as far as like the entrepreneurial aspect of you know, just business, would be The Alchemist. Just, I have a ton of books. I mean, I read books like all the time, but I just read this one lately. And this has been really on my mind a lot. And it kind of speaks directly to what you were just saying about how, you know, as you come up to these roadblocks, like how do you, you know, navigate them? Like, do you stop there or what? And The Alchemist, kind of the story of that guy, is just like full of like moments where he could have turned back, but he always found a reason why. And he was always propelled forward by people that he met along the way. So like, you know, one person he met, you know, the guy was kind of more, you know, they had this idea of going to Mecca. The guy that he met and was working with was like, I'm just cool. I'm just more cool on actually going to Mecca. I'm just kind of cool with just the thought of going. Right. And I saw how that could happen. You know what I mean? Like, cause you get these ideas and they're cool to think about, you know what I'm saying? And you can just spend so much time just kind of zoning in your own thoughts of what could be, instead of actually trying to like make it or make it happen, because it's daunting, you know, it's heavy, you know, to get out there and try to do whatever. So I understood that, how he was like, and I find that even in today, like I fanciful think about, oh, worldwide distribution would be so great, you know, and then I'm just like, well, that's going to be so hard and stuff like that. And, but I still, you know, forge along towards it, you know, at my own pace or whatever. So I love that, because the biggest thing about being an entrepreneur, especially when you don't play with other people's money and it's like your own money invested, you have no choice but to figure it out, because it's easy to walk away from some investors like, it didn't work out, guys, you know, sorry, you know, whatever. Versus when it's your own money and you're just like, oh, no, I'm not losing this. You know what I'm saying? Like, I got to figure this out.
Right.
It's a big difference, you know.
Ben, what's the most interesting thing going on in your field besides what you're doing?
And you mean like in spirits as a whole? Like,
sure. Spirits, hemp, anything in that area.
Gosh, man, I think the most interesting thing... Okay, I have one. So in Texas, obviously it's not legal, but it's really interesting to watch the fine line that's being danced between, you know, CBD shops and so forth. And I find that really interesting, how it's just a precursor for legalization that I think is really interesting to watch. Kind of like, it reminds me of the game room thing. Like, I don't know, like if you're familiar, but like, you know, where gambling isn't legal, they'll have these game rooms that like run right on the line. You know what I'm saying? And they're able to operate some kind of way, right? They operate and they do what they do. And it's just a precursor for legalization. And I mean, I find that just really interesting and fascinating to watch. Because, I mean, you got to have a lot of courage to dance on that line, number one. And number two, my God, though, you're right on the forefront. So when it does break, you're there. You know what I mean? And so yeah. I kind of give kudos to those folks that that do that. But and as far as spirits goes, I don't know, man. I mean, like, I'm just learning every single day, you know, as far as this thing goes. And I just find that exciting, period, because I just love to learn new stuff and see what's going on and see how I can get into it. And then learning how to mitigate your own growth, which is really a thing that I've been trying to, you know, wrap my own mind around and not run out further than you can, you know, even though you can technically, but really, can you? You know what I mean? Like, you know, so yeah, I could definitely, you know, go national, but can you support and really work those markets? You know, like now we're in Texas, Georgia, Southern California, and Florida, and brick and mortar. And then obviously, you know, through reservebar.com, we're, you know, available, you know, by delivery pretty much all across the country. But as far as like activating new territories on the ground, you know, you don't want to just run out there and do that. And I hear people all the time, they're saying like, oh, you know, we're in 20 states. And I'm just like, yeah, no, actually you have a case in 20 states, but what those reorders look like, you know, that's what I want to know, you know, and stuff like that. So, I mean, you know, it's just an interesting process, man. Just trying to learn the business and trying to learn how to grow a company beyond your own city's boundaries. Just something that's fascinating to me. So I don't know if that answers your question as far as spirits goes, but as far as my perspective of spirits, that's what I'm into.
All right, Ben, final question. What is your favorite unhealthy comfort food or guilty pleasure?
Oh, dude, that's a whole nother show right there. I mean, look, I don't know. We could start with pizza or cheeseburgers. I love anything that's like they say you should not eat that. I love it. I was talking to my brother about that the other day. It was just like, I was like, dude, I was saying, I really think there's something that they put in like the pizza sauce or ketchup and stuff like that, because it activates, like when it hits my mouth, I feel happiness. And he's like, nah, dude, that's just your drug. I was like, oh, okay. It does, dude. I love all that shit. That stuff is great, dude. I mean, a good cheeseburger with bacon, fries, and a Coke. Let's do it. But I know you can't. And I try not to do it often. But man, when I do it, I'm in heaven. So
yeah, good. Well, Ben, you mentioned again where Highway Vodka is available, and also the online store, and how people can connect and find you online.
Yeah, so on the social stuff, it's just at Highway Vodka on everything, and around Texas, you know, Total Wine, Specs, all the normal stores, and Georgia, the same thing. I can't remember all the stores out there, but, you know, pretty much your brick and mortar stores in Georgia. And then I wish I could remember the names of these places, but I just can't. But, you know, Southern California, Southern Florida, brick and mortar. But mainly if you walk in any of those places and you don't just see it, or you live outside of those areas, then yeah, reservebar.com. Or you can just go to highwayvodka.com and click the link there to Reserve Bar, and then you could order it right to your door right there. So that's really nice and easy.
All right. Any restaurants, bars, or alcohol distributors listening, if they want to learn more about that, is there a way?
Yeah, they could go to the website too, highwayvodka.com. And right there, there's a button to push for those kind of inquiries and stuff. And yeah, we could get them linked up for sure with distributors in their area. And if we're not in your state yet, we'll be coming soon. And maybe you'll be the jump off for that state. So that's always cool.
Yeah. Well, Ben, thanks so much for coming on. What an interesting journey you've had. And again, I really admire your grit and determination, and good luck with everything in the rest of 2021.
Thank you so much for everything, man. I appreciate it. And thanks for the opportunity to be on.
If you enjoyed the show today, please consider leaving us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever app you might be using to listen to the show. Every 5-star review helps us to bring the best guest to you. Learn more at cannainsider.com/iTunes. What are the 5 disruptive trends that will impact the cannabis industry in the next 5 years? Find out with your free report at cannainsider.com/trends. Have a suggestion for an awesome guest on Canna Insider? Simply send us an email at feedback@cannainsider.com. We'd love to hear from you. Please do not take any information from Canna Insider or its guests as medical advice. Contact your licensed physician before taking cannabis or using it for medical treatments.
Promotional consideration may be provided by select guests, advertisers, or companies featured in Canna Insider.
Lastly, the host or guests on Canna Insider may or may not invest in the companies or entrepreneurs profiled on the show. Please consult your licensed financial advisor before making any investment decisions. Final disclosure to see if you're still paying attention. This little whistle jingle you're listening to will get stuck in your head for the rest of the day. Thanks for listening, and look for another Canna Insider episode soon. Take care. Bye-bye.